Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
It is United States that is responsible for providing the small arms that goes into the killing. In fact, 80% of the arms that are available in Haiti at the moment that is responsible for the mayhem that we are witnessing have come from United States.
Hello and welcome to Behind the Lines. I'm Arthur Snell. Last year in Haiti, more people died in the violence and disorder in that country than will have died in Ukraine in the massive war that's taking place between Russia and that country. Although Haiti is in America's backyard and is often seen as somewhere that America can control and influence, it has descended into chaos and is now barely a country at all, merely a territory riven by anarchy and violence. So to help us understand what's happening in Haiti, I was delighted to be able to speak to Professor Amelindu Misra, who is based at the University of Lancaster and who is an expert in Latin America and the Caribbean and notably Haiti, to give us a real insight into what's going on there. Here he is.
Hi, good afternoon, Arthur. I'm Amelindu Misra. I'm a professor of international politics at Lancaster University, and I specialize in conflict and peace. I've written 6 single-authored monographs. They sort of cover various aspects of conflict. And my area specializes in Latin America and the Caribbean. And in that particular context, we are going to talk about the island nation of Haiti today.
Indeed. Well, so thank you so much for joining me, Amelindu, and it's great to be talking to you. Obviously, Haiti is one of those countries that probably most people don't know very much about. They know that it's a poor country, that it's faced a lot of challenges over the years. But in recent weeks in particular, we've seen news reports that effectively it appears that the central government of Haiti has really collapsed. It barely functions, and that the gangs are kind of taking control. But we need to go back to understand the roots of these problems. But perhaps before we go there, could you give a quick snapshot of what the current situation is, to the best of your knowledge, the current situation in Haiti?
It is a society that is in the midst of a complete breakdown of order. There is no law, there is no order, and there is no centralized government to sort of rule the masses. And yeah, in the absence of a centralized government, what we have are these 200 odd armed militias, gangs, violent gangs, who have taken over basically the country to a ransom. And yeah, they're going about doing all sorts of violent undertakings, raping, looting, terrorizing, and so much so, they managed to topple a kind of caretaker government that was in place for the last 3 years, led by a man called Ariel Henry. And he has stepped down, but he is nominally in power until we have got a new interim government in place. That is where we are at the moment.
So we're talking, as you say, about a country which exists on the map, but its government does not really exist in reality.
That is indeed the case, because when you talk about a state, it should have a semblance of internal order, institutions that kind of governs day-to-day activities of citizens and the affairs of the state. Unfortunately, Haiti doesn't have it. And this didn't happen overnight. It has been on a steady decline for over the last 20 years. In fact, I would say from the year 1986. So that's, we are talking about some 36 years or 38 years, if I'm doing the math correctly. And one after another, institutions in Haiti have bitten the dust, so to speak. And as a result of which, we have arrived at a scenario where there is no central government, there is no effective government, the government is not effectively kind of represented at the international level. And as I said a little earlier, the ones that are ruling the roost, so to speak, are the gangs. In order to explain what is happening in Haiti at the moment, we need to sort of go back a little into the recent history. And this is the year 1986 that we are talking about, when after almost 30 years of father-son dictatorship of Papa Doc Duvalier and Baby Doc Duvalier, Haiti finally entered into a phase of what we may call democracy, which led to the emergence of a democratic government in the early 1990s, but that had its problems. The institutions in Haiti that are responsible for carrying forward the day-to-day process of governance have disappeared over the last 30, 40 years, if we talk about it. And we have arrived at a scenario where there are absolutely no institution to keep the country together and to impose order and to take care of the citizens. And that is the reason why we have the gangs, marauding gangs, running amok and doing everything that they want to do. It is almost an apocalyptic scenario. I'm not exaggerating it, but if you are used to the kind of visual representation of Haiti at the moment, you would know exactly what is going on.
Yeah. So you mentioned that important date of 1986, and I want to talk more about that. But before we go there, there is a more recent incident, which you've also referred to, which is 2021 and the assassination of the former president. So could you tell us a bit about that incident, which perhaps precipitated the most recent collapse in law and order?
Well, if we go back again to history, we realize that Haiti has been having a kind of temporary democratic governments, which are kind of toppled either by the military or by kind of a gang takeover. So what happened in the year 2021, in June 2021, to be precise, the ruling president, Jovenel Moise, was assassinated by Colombian mercenaries. And it is still a kind of murky plot. We don't know who was behind it. It suggested that there were some vested interest groups from United States. It's also suggested that his wife was involved. But to cut a long story short, immediately after the fall of Moises, the country fell into chaos. Now, we need to realize as to what happened here. The governments in Haiti in the last 70 years or so have been kept in place, so far as security and so far as allegiance is concerned, by private militias and gangs, to be precise. And Jovenel Moise was supported by one of the key gangs that is ruling Port-au-Prince, the capital at the moment. And following his assassination, Haiti has got a very strange system of governance, almost similar to what the former colonial power France has. It's a presidential system, but the power is divided between the president and the prime minister. The president appoints the prime minister. So immediately after the assassination of Jovenel Moïse, the sitting prime minister, Ariel Henry, was the caretaker president. But the constitution requires that Henry should have declared a new election within 120 days, but he didn't do so. And as a result of which, it created a lot of discontent on the ground. And feeding on that discontent, the power brokers, who were the gangs, started slowly undermining the authority of the government. Since Ariel Henry didn't have the legitimacy that he should have had, he was deeply unpopular. To make matters worse, he went a month ago to Kenya, which is trying to bring to Haiti some law and order under the resolutions of United Nations Security Council of a kind of police force. And that wasn't going down very well with the gangs, because that would have meant their power was being undermined. And that is the reason why they wanted Ariel Henry's resignation, and they didn't allow him to come back to Haiti. In fact, they took over the airport.
As you say, some people have pointed the finger at the former wife of the president, the widow. Others have pointed the finger at the successor, Henri, who of course is now the caretaker ruler. But that in itself, it's extraordinary, isn't it, that a private funded mercenary group was able to assassinate the leader of a sovereign state?
Well, interestingly, Haiti has got a very problematic or complex relationship with politicians as with gangs or private militias, as you rightly pointed out, because they have been the real power brokers from the time of Haiti's former president, Papadoc Duvalier, because he introduced a private militia by the name of Tonton Macoute, and they were responsible for kind of providing support to the president in the absence of a kind of credible military or the police force. So what has happened from the year 1957 onwards is that the creation of a political culture whereby the business leaders, the politicians, are dependent on non-state actors for their survival and success.
Yeah.
And if that is the case, it is not at all surprising that Jovenel Moïse was killed by one of those actors who were not particularly keen on him being there at the helm of political affairs.
Yeah. So let's go back now to 1986. And what you described, that there's the father-son succession of dictatorships, the Duvalier, so-called Papa Doc and Baby Doc, the who ruled Haiti with an iron fist. Quite a brutal regime. This, of course, is in the period of the Cold War. What was Haiti's geopolitical situation at that time?
Let's not forget that Haiti is only 800 miles south of Key West, Florida. And whatever happens in Haiti has got repercussions in the United States. And we saw that during the Bear Pigs incident, during the Cuban Revolution, and how the United States felt threatened whenever there was a kind of left-wing ideology so closer to home. So what happens here is that United States supports the rise of François Duvalier, who comes into power democratically in 1957, but shortly after he declares himself as president for life. And he is a kind of figure who is intensely anti-left. So that kind of suits United States' interest very well. And they provide him with the support that is very critical for any of the Latin American or Caribbean leaders to survive and continue. As you have seen, United States has toppled so many leaders in Latin America during the Cold War years. But Duvalier luckily managed to continue in this Caribbean island from 1957 until 1986, when his son was finally toppled. But Duvalier created a situation or a context whereby he was the authority, and he went about systematically undermining and destroying all the democratic institutions in the country. And as a result of which, we arrived at a scenario in 1986, whereby his son was deposed, but Haiti did not have a semblance of a governing structure which could take care of the state and the society.
Yeah. So this is a classic case study where the pragmatism of the Cold War era drove America to support a dictator because of the sense of the anti-leftist positioning. Haiti is, of course, next door to Cuba. There are other countries in Central America at that time who were experimenting with left-wing governments. And the Duvaliers steadily undermined the institutions of Haiti's state. Is it before that rise to power of Duvalier, was Haiti a functioning state? Did it have institutions, security, and other public services?
Well, Haiti is a very interesting case in the sense that it is one of the first, second republic in the Western Hemisphere, in the Americas, yeah, in the continent of North and South America after the United States. It's Haiti that is the first, second republic after the United States. And that tells you something. But more importantly, this is a republic which was founded by the slaves. They were the slaves who sort of fought against the Napoleonic forces and created a free slave republic in the year 1804.
Yeah.
But that didn't go down very well with the French colonial powers. And that didn't go down also very well with the United States, because it was afraid that the slave revolt that took place in Haiti might have a kind of knock-on effect, or it might have a contagion effect, whereby United States would have to say goodbye to its profitable slaving or slavery, which was responsible for its plantations in the whole of southern United States. And as a result of which, Haiti faced ostracism both by the French as well as the United States.
So what you've described there is how Haiti became, almost from its earliest days, a kind of pariah state, because it was set up by slaves who had fought colonial oppression and had become a free state. But coming into the 20th century, did that history still have an impact on Haiti's development as a country?
Indeed. I mean, let's not forget that Haiti was called the Pearl of the Antilles, and it was the richest colony of France during the 19th century. And it could have continued, the economy could have continued on the right path had it not been for the French design. So what happened in 1804, after the French were kind of thrown out, the French government imposed sanctions on Haiti's the slave government, saying that you have to pay reparations. This is something unheard of. That reparation, because we lost so much in Haiti because of your revolt. As a result of which, the Haitians were forced to, the Haitian governments from 1825 until 1947, we're talking about 122 years, to pay reparations to France. And Haiti didn't have money, so they had to borrow money from the French banks. So those 122 years of reparation costs completely ruined Haiti's economy.
Yeah.
So to make matters worse, what we had was a kleptocracy, corruption, dictators, and so on and so forth. So since Haiti was also dependent on monoculture, there is the production of sugar cane and sugar in return, when there were competitions from other islands such as Cuba or in Central America, its economy also went down. So we simply cannot dissociate Haiti's economic woes in the 21st century or 20th century without having some kind of look at what was happening in the 19th century because of the French rule regarding reparation.
Yeah, I mean, it's an extraordinary story that these people who had been enslaved were then paying, you know, you'd think that they should receive compensation, but it's the opposite, that they paid compensation for 120 years. I mean, it's kind of unbelievable. But let's go forward now. So at the end of the Duvalier regime, we're talking now about the 1980s, there was briefly a sense of optimism that Haiti had emerged from this period of a brutal dictatorship. You mentioned earlier this militia, the famous Tonton Macoute, who were incredibly violent, carried out terrible murders and you know, massacres. And so there was this optimism that came with Jean-Bertrand Aristide, the new leader of Haiti, the democratic leader. What happened in that period at the end of the 80s and into the 1990s?
Now, interestingly, the democratic experiment was a failure in the sense that it was affected by whatever was going on during the Papa Doc and Baby Doc Duvalier's 30-odd years of misrule, because they had created a society, they had created a state which was intensely armed. Although the Tonton Macoute came to an end with the fall of Baby Doc Duvalier, or Jean-Claude Duvalier, what happened is that the disbanding doesn't necessarily mean that the arms are not there in the society, but they remain in the hands of the former militias, and they do not see eye to eye with each other in terms of the political establishment. So they're a floating kind of power who align themselves with the opposition. So Haiti's governing structure has always had these gangs who had aligned themselves with the opposition, and Aristide faced the wrath of the gangs, which was kind of supported by the opposition, the business elites and others who didn't want him there. So there was a coup against him. And there was also a kind of a coup again in 2004, because Aristide was considered as someone who is too left-wing, who was not in the interest of United States. So interestingly, United States props up Aristide in the 1990s, but then he realizes that he's too hot to handle because of his left-leaning credentials. He's kind of pro-poor, and he doesn't. United States doesn't want to have a kind of problem on its hand. So that is the reason why he's unceremoniously pushed to, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere in Central Africa, where he sort of lives out his last days.
Right. So this instability obviously continues during the democratic era, but the sort of the other big incident that seems important in this story was the devastating earthquake, which I think occurred, was that in 2011?
2010, we had a devastating earthquake, which kind of led to the destruction almost of entire Haiti. We're talking about 200,000 casualties. And so imagine a kind of a country that is struggling, which is the poorest in the Western Hemisphere, by the way, where almost 58% people live below the poverty line. And the devastating earthquake destroyed whatever little semblance of economic structure that was left. Yes. So that created another chaos whereby the gangs had no choice but to start engaging in the looting, large-scale looting that was created by this natural catastrophe. But we simply can't talk about just the earthquake. We also had a hurricane that came some 6 years later in 2016, if I'm not mistaken, which destroyed again whatever was left in Haiti. So that created its own problems in the country that was already on its knees. And let's not forget that Haiti has got a very young population. So when we talk about the gangs, we also need to remember that they need some kind of employment. And there is a particular theory in political economy. We talk about the greed theory, which talks about the gangs are the products of a society where there is nothing going around. So it becomes a gainful employment for this floating, violent, young population. And that needs to be looked at within that context as well.
Yeah. So the point here is we can talk about gangs, and from the safety of I know you're in Lancaster University. I'm in Cheltenham. From the safety of our comfortable lives, we can be judgmental about gangs, but these gangs provide a livelihood for many thousands of young people.
That is indeed the case, because how else would they survive? Because the kind of relationship that they have developed with whatever business sector that is there. And also, let's not forget that Haiti sits at the crossroads of a very kind of lucrative what we may call smuggling route. The smuggling route is both in terms of narcotics as well as small arms. So Haitian militias or Haitian gangs profit from the trade route that they have between the South American, Central American route via United States. So they have a role to play in terms of what is going on in terms of the cartels, which have become so powerful. So they bring in some money and they are engaged in some kind of illegal economic practices. But again, we have to say, as you have rightly pointed out, in from our comfort zone, we don't see where the second meal is going to come from, or the first meal for them. So that is the reason why plenty of people, without having any gainful employment, become a part of these gangs. Roadblocks are a form of employment, as we see in places such as Central Africa or in the Horn of Africa, Somalia being in particular. So that's what we need to look at in terms of the larger economic picture as well.
Yeah. And so I'm glad that you mentioned there that some of the regional questions. So as you said, Haiti, of course, is on this transshipment route, illegal narcotics, also small arms. And that draws us to a wider point, which is that the Caribbean region faces the challenge of gang violence, of high homicide rates. And whilst Haiti is in an extreme situation with the collapse of its government, it is, you know, we see very high levels, for example, of homicide in Jamaica, in Honduras, in other parts of the wider region. So what helps us to understand the reasons for that region of the world facing these particular challenges?
There are a couple of things that are all intertwined with each other. First one we have already looked at is bad governance and absence of credible institutions. Haiti, for instance, doesn't have an army, which the army is kind of there for the name's sake. You would expect that in chaos and anarchy, it is the army that will take over. Yeah. But to go back again into Haiti's history, the Papa Doc destroyed the army because he didn't want army to be a threat, because he realized that army has been responsible for all sorts of coups and counter coups in Haitian history.
Yeah.
And the current government was kind of somewhat lucrative to the army. And that is one of the reasons why Jovenel Moïse was killed. It is argued because that was against the interest of several kind of groups in the country. So to go back to the question that you asked as to why there is such a massive homicide rate, by the way, to sort of put things in perspective, in last year alone, 2023, there are 500,000 people who got killed in Haiti by militias and other non-state actors. That is half a million that we are talking about. And you've already talked about Jamaica, you've already talked about Honduras. El Salvador has somewhat in a kind of better picture because of the mano dura or the iron hand technique followed by the controversial President Nayib Bukele. But to understand the larger picture of that, we need to sort of turn our focus on the United States. Yeah. It's the United States that is responsible for providing the small arms that goes into the killing. In fact, 80% of the arms that are available in Haiti at the moment that is responsible for the mayhem that we are witnessing have come from the United States. And I'm not going to accept this argument that the United States doesn't have a role to play in terms of whatever is going on in terms of the Caribbean and the Central American region. And the next one is the kind of market for the illicit drugs that is there in the United States the consumption habits of people in the United States. So that has kept the kind of supply and demand going. And we simply cannot dissociate United States from the chaos and anarchy that is unfolding before our very eyes at the moment.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
So what we're talking about there is basically a two-way trade where the United States imports drugs. Obviously, these are not legal drugs, but they are imported, that the market is there, the consumption is there, and it exports small arms, again, presumably mostly illegally, but still in vast flood throughout this region.
Yes, that is very much the case because it is done. I mean, very much because you have got very lax gun laws in several states, in several provinces or states in the United States, especially the southern ones, whereby you can procure these armaments without very little kind of verification. And that again is shipped to these troubled places, not just Haiti, but Jamaica, Trinidad and Tobago is something where you have already stopped as a part of the British High Commission. You've been the British High Commissioner there in Trinidad and Tobago, which is a very violent country, by the way. Guyana is another former British colony that we need to keep in mind while we're talking about it. So indeed, I mean, lax laws in terms of procurement and a very kind of lucrative market that exists in the whole region sort of feeds the violence that we have at the moment. And if we talk about bringing about some degree of peace, there has to be disarmament, there has to be sort of decommissioning of these arms. Yeah. But that has never taken place.
Yeah, indeed. And I'm glad you mentioned Trinidad and Tobago. Of course, as you said, I served there as a diplomat. But that's another example where, yes, the homicide rate, I think at the moment it may be third or fourth in the world. And Trinidad, as you all know, is quite a wealthy country. It has quite good infrastructure. It is not like Haiti. You know, public services are functional. You know, that there may be room for improvement. But this is, in spite of all of those benefits, it still faces this very high homicide rate. But moving back to Haiti, you've described a state in collapse. So it's a terrifying prospect and significant at a degree. We can't just say, well, this is a small country, you know, it's not so important on the global level. What can be done? A lot of what we described in the historic context was about the legacies of colonialism, of the slave trade, but it feels as if foreign intervention, which is often looked on as a form of modern imperialism, might be necessary. What's your view on that?
Well, let's not forget the fact that this is a republic which was founded on the principle of liberté, égalité, and fraternité. And when you talk about a society that has freed itself from the yokes of colonialism, is unlikely to accept any kind of foreign intervention.
Yeah.
So let's give credit to the Haitians. They're fiercely independent.
Yes.
And that history that they have is a testimony to that. So whenever you talk about any kind of foreign intervention to address the challenges facing Haitians, it is a non-starter.
Right.
That's number one. But having said that, we simply cannot throw our hands in the air and say that there is nothing can be done about it.
Yeah.
a lot of the problems that we have in Haiti are homegrown, but at the same time, as you have seen, a lot of it are products of what is happening outside the source of Haiti. So therefore, there has to be some degree of reconciliation between both. So both yeah. have to come together to sort of genuinely address the challenges faced by the society. Now, yeah. unfortunately, the political culture of Haiti is dominated by what we call the bourgeoisie, which is intensely corrupt.
Yes.
And they have manipulated the people's sentiment. They have propped up the gangs and to sort of to line their own pockets, to steal the coffers. So we need to sort of create a new political culture. And I'm not suggesting that this new political culture has to start with taking the gangs who want to be at the center of the new political arrangement.
Yeah.
But there are times when we need to sort of bite the bullet or swallow the bitter pill. We didn't take the Taliban seriously. We kept them out of the picture in Afghanistan, and we realized that 20 years down the line, after trillions of US dollars spent, we sort of had to beat a hasty retreat.
Yes.
So if Afghanistan is an example, we need to ask this question that who do you want to have in the center of a new structure? United Nations Security Council has passed a resolution which calls for a kind of multinational interventionist force to sort of keep the cultural sensitivity in perspective. It
yeah.
has invited countries such as Kenya and Benin from Africa so that there won't be this idea of white man's burden, as we have already referred to,
yes.
in terms of addressing the challenges on the ground. But the problem, of course, is that the outsiders have done quite a lot of kind of contributed to the misery of Haitians in recent memory. And let
yes.
me go back to what was happening under the Blue Berets, the UN peacekeeping forces that served in Haiti in the early part of this century, the Brazilian ones in particular. And it is a kind of unspeakable story whereby they were kind of raping children. The kind of sexual violence that was taken place by the Blue Berets, the international peacekeepers under the UN's banner, was horrific. Followed on by the Nepalese troops who were there, was replaced them with Brazilians. They sort of unleashed the cholera in Port-au-Prince, which sort of led to tens of thousands of deaths in the country. So that has left a pretty bad taste in the Haitian memory. And that is the reason why they are somewhat kind of skeptical, no matter what sort of uniform they wear, no matter what kind of color do they have. So any kind of foreign intervention is kind of taken with a kind of pinch of salt. So when we talk about
yeah.
The Haitians, citizens' skepticism over outsiders being do-gooders. So the proof of pudding is in the eating, as they say, and we have realized that they have done far more harm than good so far as the general populace is concerned.
Yeah, so you've got an understandable high level of suspicion and reluctance to see these groups coming in. Is there a role for countries in the region? You know, we've mentioned Jamaica, Guyana, Trinidad, places like that that have their own defense and security forces. Could they play a role, and would they have a better understanding of the environment potentially?
That's a very good question. Given that Haiti was the second oldest republic in the Americas, it has been a key member of all the institutional frameworks that are in place in Western Hemisphere. Haiti is a member of Organization
yeah.
of American States, and then Haiti is also a member of CARICOM, the Caribbean Community.
Yes.
So when you talk about regional grouping or what the region can do to salvage Haiti from its current anarchy, the current peace plan that we have has been brokered by United States and CARICOM, the Caribbean Community, which led to the former president, prime minister, stroke prime minister, Ariel Henry, stepping down and agreeing to a kind of interim government, which will be set up by taking into consideration the civil society members, the business leaders, the politicians, oppositions, and so on and so forth. So yes, the regional community is trying its best to bring about some kind of solution to the problem. But the challenge, of course, is it is not that they don't have good intentions. Let's say, for example, the United States has promised $300 million US dollars, which can go towards addressing some of the pressing problems that we have on the ground. But given the role that the gangs play, any kind of peace plan is going to undermine their place and position in the society. They have been the power brokers for the last two generations in one form or the other. So if we have some kind of external interventionist force, be it in the Kenyan police force trying to bring order, they are the ones who are going to be the first casualty of that peace plan. So a realistic police plan, therefore, should involve the gangs. And that is one of the reasons why one of the charismatic gangs who sort of goes by the name of Barbecue, his moniker, Barbecue, Jimmy Sherzie, has been talking about gangs being to be given some degree of political influence and power in any kind of future power-sharing arrangement. But the international community doesn't want to shake hands with devil, so to speak. The gangs have been responsible for 500,000 homicides in the last year alone. If the gangs have been responsible for plunging the country into current anarchy, how could you sort of have them around the negotiating table? But I sort of work on conflict and peace, and I can tell you from my own experience of having dealt with Taliban and others, having lived in Northern Ireland as well, sometimes you have to kind of bite the bullet, swallow the bitter pill, and take these kind of nefarious groups into confidence. Otherwise, they're always going to be the ones who will throw a kind of spanner into the wheel, so to speak. They're always going to be the spoilers, as you call it. So any kind of peace plan, any kind of regional interventionist arrangement is going to be a failure unless and until the gangs are taken seriously and given a political role.
Yeah, well, it's such a good point. And of course, your scholarship will bear this out. But my own sort of experience tells us that the international community, they avoid talking to these groups. And then at the end, they always end up talking to them anyway. So really, you just have to accept the reality. And if the gangs control the ground, then of course, they have to be part of the debate.
Indeed, that is really the case, because what we have seen, I mean, United States had a very kind of a strong view so far as the Taliban was concerned in Afghanistan at the beginning of its military campaign in Afghanistan. But when it realized that in order to have a kind of semblance of governing structure in place in Afghanistan, it had to talk to Taliban, although behind the scene or through proxies such as Qatar.
Yeah.
So something similar has to be undertaken here, although you might, for the sake of diplomacy, you may not have a kind of open discussion, but we have to have these channels of communication going. And let's not forget that the gangs are also linked to the political elites in the society. And gangs are also ideologically motivated when they're talking about corrupt politicians, when they're talking about the bourgeoisie, when they're talking about Haiti's future cannot be assured when we have this bourgeoisie taking decisions away from Haiti, there is a certain amount of truth in it. So however despicable they may be, but there is a particular political message that simply cannot be ignored. And that has to do with the people on the ground. So before we have the external boots on the ground, there has to be some kind of deal that has to take place with the gangs, as I put it a little earlier. It's a very difficult choice, but as you rightly put it, we do that. We sort of accept it in the long run. So I think it will be prudent and intelligent if we sort of...
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Tsunis.
I'm Kayla Tsunis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Keep that channel of communication open and going.
Yeah. So, as a final question, you know, we talked a lot about Haiti and about the Caribbean region. Are there lessons from the collapse of the state in Haiti that are applicable in other places, in other environments? Or is Haiti really a rather unique story because of its very particular history?
Haiti is not a unique story. The problem is that Haiti has deteriorated under the very eye of United States, the big brother, which could have rescued it. But they have kept the problem at a kind of arm's length. By not involving themselves very seriously. We have had successive US presidents taking a little bit of interest, but not fully. And that is one of the reasons why we have arrived at the scenario where we have. And there are many fragile states. Haiti currently is being called as a failed state, where there is no institution in place, where the social contract that the citizens have with the state has completely broken down. There is no one in charge. So where, if this is going to be replicated in some other areas, other places, possibly. In Central America, that is very much the case. Honduras, you have already pointed out, Honduras is currently the homicidal capital of the world. That particular infamous tag was held by El Salvador until recently. So there are many weak, fragile states in Central America, also in the Andean region, Ecuador being another country, which has come under the firm grip of the gangs. So institutions in these places are weak. The political culture in these places is corrupt. And if there is no seriousness on part of United States to address these issues, then definitely they are going to go the way Haiti has gone.
So it's a reminder that the US, which of course is often dragged into global questions and questions, for example, of the security of Europe and in the Middle East, of course, has a responsibility and a need to pay attention to what's happening on its own doorstep as well.
Indeed. I mean, United Nations has got a particular There is a lesson which is called responsibility to protect. So when we talk about responsibility to protect, United Nations doesn't have its own standing army. United Nations delegates its authority to the United States. Sometimes it is done openly, sometimes it is done tacitly in the name of state building or nation building. So United States has got this unenviable position of being the regional boss, or call it big brother or whatever may be. So if it can take an interest in whatever is happening in, let's say, for example, in South Asia or in the Middle East or in Europe, so naturally the responsibility falls on its shoulders, broad shoulders, to take whatever is happening on its doorsteps. Let's not forget, as I said, it's just 800 miles south of the Key West in Florida. So it simply cannot remain closed to all the catastrophic chaos that is taking place. So it requires guts. It requires a kind of steely determination on part of the U.S. administration, whether it is President Biden at the moment, or you don't know what is going to happen next year. By having walls, we are not going to keep ourselves secure, just like the way United States is trying to secure itself by building the border wall with Mexico to keep the unwanted from Central America and the Caribbean. There has to be some degree of reckoning that it needs to play that role, which fell upon itself from the early part of 19th century under the framework of Monroe Doctrine, which created the whole of Caribbean and Latin America as the American lake.
Yeah, so that responsibility is one that continues to this day, albeit one that has been known about in history.
There is no escaping from that. We have seen several administrations. We have had Roosevelt Corollary. We had Truman Doctrine, which have been kind of built upon what Monroe had established way back in 1823, if I'm not mistaken. So we're talking about almost 200 years since the United States declared itself as the purveyor of the hemispheric political, economic, and military processes. And whether we accept it or not, although we might not have a NATO in the Western Hemisphere, what we have is Organization of American States, which has got a similar doctrine, one for all and all for one, where the security United States is the security guarantor. It is the undertaker of security in the region. And it was doing it by direct intervention, as we saw during Cold War years under the leadership of individual presidents like Richard Nixon, or under the leadership of the Secretary of State, Henry Kissinger, whole of Central America, Chile being another very good example. So it cannot do so directly, perhaps, through military intervention, because it's problematic. It means the body bags. American public isn't interested in seeing that. But having said that, it simply cannot wash its hands off. What we have seen recent years is that because of the declining role of United States in the region, we have other powers such as Russia, Iran, who have been making overtures towards various regimes in the Latin American region, Venezuela being particular, Nicaragua under Daniel Ortega, where they are becoming the kind of fly in the ointment of the thorn in the interest of United States. So if United States sort of leaves Latin America or some Caribbean region to its own fate, what we would have is a similar scenario that we have witnessed elsewhere in the globe, and they will be drawn into this kind of great power politics once again. Not exactly what we had during the Cold War years, but a kind of small-scale anarchy, the likes of which we are witnessing in Haiti at the moment.
Well, that feels like a brilliant point to end this discussion. Thank you for helping my listeners understand a country that is going through a very, very difficult period and needs outsiders to understand it better. So thank you for joining me today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me to share my views with your listeners. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Behind the Lines. It was produced and presented by me, Arthur Snell. If you want to make sure you never miss another episode, make sure you subscribe. And if you liked it, give us a good review.